What is so special about Orthanc, Saruman's stronghold? Why did he choose it, and what happened after the Lord of the Rings? Let's take a look. Hi everyone, this is Robert. Welcome to In Deep Geek. Here we cover great fantasy stories like The Lord of the Rings, A Song of Ice and Fire, and The Witcher in nerdy detail. Welcome. Saruman the White took up his abode in Orthanc in the Ring of Isengard in the year 2759 of the Third Age. At the time, he was considered most welcome by the free peoples of Middle-earth. He was the head of the White Council, after all, and it was only many years later that his neighbours and the other members of the White Council realised that he had not gone there out of the goodness of his heart to protect the people of Rohan against incursions by the Dunlendings to the west. So, what was it about Orthanc in particular that made one of the Astari live in the wilderness, far away from Minas Tirith, Edoras or Rivendell, and what were its secrets? The story of Orthanc begins at the end of the Second Age, when the survivors of the Fall of Numenor come to Middle-earth and found the realms in exile, Arnor and Gondor. They not only build many cities and fortresses, they also built Orthanc. We read that it was fashioned by the builders of old, who smoothed the Ring of Isengard, and yet it seemed a thing not made by the craft of men, but riven from the bones of the earth in the ancient torment of the hills. A peak and isle of rock it was, black and gleaming hard. Four mighty piers of many-sided stone were welded into one, but near the summit they opened into gaping horns, their pinnacles sharp as the points of spears, keen-edged as knives. Between them was a narrow space, and there upon a floor of polished stone, written with strange signs, a man might stand 500 feet above the plain. So the first thing here is that Orthanc is a marvel of construction, which must have been of particular interest to Saruman, a Maia of Aula, the smith, who had a mind of metal and wheels, as Treebeard noted. That's quite a poetic way of saying that he liked engineering, as well as other things, and there isn't much better engineering in Middle-earth than Orthanc. Moreover, it promised absolute safety against even the strongest of enemies, as Gandalf recounts in The Lord of the Rings. Many of the Ents were hurling themselves against the Orthanc rock, but that defeated them. It is very smooth and hard, some wizardry in it, perhaps, older and stronger than Saruman's. Anyway, they could not get a grip on it, or make a crack in it, and they were bruising and wounding themselves against it. It is never made clear out of what material or materials this tower was built. Only the ingenious builders of Numenor, who had honed their craft in the course of millennia, seem to have been able to work it to such levels of near indestructibility. Perhaps there was some magic involved, but Tolkien's magic system is notoriously light. In Unfinished Tales, we find out that the Circle of Isengard was too strong for even the Lord of Morgul and his company to assail without great force of war. Which led to a rather amusing moment where the Nazgul were forced to wait outside Isengard, listening to Saruman project his voice out to them, denying he knew anything about the Shire or Baggins or the whereabouts of the Ring. And to be clear, when we talk about Orthanc, we mean the main central tower. Isengard is the wider fortification itself, a massive circular wall of black stone with just one mighty entrance, the curve beginning and ending at the mountains themselves. The circle inside that wall was perhaps a mile in diameter, 1.5 kilometres or so, and the Tower of Orthanc was in the centre. The whole defensive structure kept guard over the Gap of Rohan and the River Isen, which was the only way for hundreds of miles to pass from east to west in Middle-earth without going over or under the Misty or White Mountains. Okay, so Orthanc was an impressive and indomitable structure, but it was also isolated and able to keep prying eyes away from what was going on within. Although at the time of Saruman's taking ownership of the tower he had not completed his fall from grace, he did definitely want to conduct some rather secret studies into ringcraft, and would in time even be looking into breeding orcs, not the kinds of things he wanted his neighbours asking questions about. And talking of research into ringcraft, Orthanc is also relatively close to the Gladden Fields, the last known sighting of the One Ring, not next door, but close enough to send a few expeditionary parties. But probably the deciding factor for Saruman is perhaps obvious to readers of The Lord of the Rings, but forgotten by almost everyone at the time. Saruman discovered through his research that there was a very good chance that one of the Palantiri, the Seeing Stones, was still there, the Orthanc Stone. And he was proven right. For those in any doubt, the Palantiri are not just cool crystal balls. They could see over vast distances and even into the past, as well as allow communications with other users. Just imagine you were looking for something that went missing in the past and knew where roughly it had gone missing and when, but not what had happened to it. A Palantir would be an invaluable tool. Saruman gratefully took the keys to Orthanc and access to the Orthanc stone. From his position in his Tower of Power, Saruman started weaving his web of alliances, fear and manipulation. From weakening Rohan through the works of Grima Wormtongue, to riling up the Dunlendings to join him in war, and building his very own army, counting well over 10,000 orcs and men. But there was one thing most important to him, and it could have changed the course of history. His search for the One Ring. Saruman must have realised at some point while sitting and scheming in Orthanc that his best shot at ruling Middle-earth would be if the One Ring were on one of his fingers. Another option would have been for him to rediscover the secrets of the forging of the Rings of Power and make one for himself, which he definitely also tried. Keep an eye out for a video on that soon, but finding the One was the most promising road to success. In all of this, it's hard to escape noticing that Saruman's attempt at becoming a lord and power in his own right feels like a less impressive copy of the OG Dark Lord out there, Sauron. He based himself in a dark tower, built an orc army, used a palantir and tried to make a ring of power. It's particularly noticeable after Saruman had made the mistake of looking at Barad-dûr while using the palantir and meeting a mind far superior to his, as is noted in The Lord of the Rings. Saruman had slowly shaped Isengard to his shifting purposes, and made it better, as he thought, being deceived, for which he forsook his former wisdom, and which fondly he imagined were his own, came but from Mordor, so that what he made was naught, only a little copy, a child's model or a slave's flattery, of that vast fortress, armoury, prison, furnace of great power, Barad-dûr, the Dark Tower, which suffered no rival, and laughed at flattery, biding its time, secure in its pride and immeasurable strength. Yes, Saruman had raised an army. He had devastated Fangorn to fuel his plans. He made the best use of his voice that almost carried the day, even when the victorious Rohirrim turned up at his very door. But his arrogance and quite possibly his jealousy of Gandalf had shaped his already negatively affected mind for the worse. A sharp intellect, a treasure trove of wisdom, one of the most powerful beings to come to Middle-earth with a clear task at hand, who failed catastrophically and died a petty-minded bully, killed by his own creation. Only after the War of the Ring had ended and Aragorn was crowned king did it become clear how dangerously close Saruman had come to finding the One Ring. It was King Elessar, when reordering his realms at the beginning of the Fourth Age, who had gone to Orthanc and searched behind a hidden door that they could not have found or opened had not Elessar had the aid of Gimli the Dwarf. A steel closet was revealed. Maybe it had been intended to receive the ring, but it was almost bare. In a casket on a high shelf, two things were laid. One was a small case of gold, attached to a fine chain. It was empty and bore no letter or token, but beyond all doubt, it had once borne the ring about Isildur's neck. Saruman had found the body of Isildur, but too late. The One Ring was already gone. And that's not the only thing they found. We read that all the secrets of the tower were searched. Many things of worth were found. Jewels and heirlooms of Eol, filched from Edoras by the agency of Wormtongue during King Theoden's decline, and other such things, more ancient and beautiful, from mounds and tombs far and wide. Saruman, in his degradation, had become not a dragon, but a jackdaw. They also found a treasure without price, long mourned as lost forever, the Elendilmir itself, the white star of elvish crystal upon a fillet of mithril that had descended from Silmarion to Elendil, and had been taken by him as the token of royalty in the North Kingdom. Every king and the chieftains that followed them in Arnor had borne the Elendilmir down even to Elessar himself. But though it was a jewel of great beauty, made by elven smiths in Imladris for Valandil, Isildur's son, it had not the ancientry nor potency of the one that had been lost when Isildur fled into the dark and came back no more. So, what was so special about Orthanc? First, it was an astonishing feat of engineering, using magical technology now lost to Middle-earth. And the wider Isengard structure was astonishing too. The Ents hurled themselves at Orthanc and couldn't even scratch it. Also, it offered a secret place for Saruman to pursue his objectives, so far away from prying eyes that he could even build an army and plot the downfall of Middle-earth with no one suspecting. Third, it was the home to the Orthanc Stone, one of only a handful of the ridiculously powerful Palantiri that could see not just far off, but into the past too, and communicate with others from afar. And that wasn't the only treasure hidden there, and properly hidden. Only a master engineer like Gimli could find all of its secrets. Still, even with all of these advantages, Orthanc ended up availing Saruman little. As Tolkien himself summarised at the end of The Fellowship of the Ring, "Here ends the first part of the history of the War of the Ring. The second part is called The Two Towers, since the events recounted in it are dominated by Orthanc, the citadel of Saruman, and the fortress of Minas Morgul that guards the secret entrance to Mordor. It tells of the deeds and perils of all members of the now-sundered Fellowship until the coming of the Great Darkness. That darkness would have engulfed Saruman and his orcs and men, even if they had won the war in Rohan. Against the armies of Sauron and the alliances he had built over a very long time, there was no chance of survival, and the Dark Lord would have dealt accordingly with this usurper, traitor, and unfriend. Even Orthanc would not have saved Saruman." If you'd like to see more Lord of the Rings videos, please click on the link on the left of your screen. Or if you'd like to support this channel, thank you. There's a link to my Patreon page on the right of your screen. That's all for this time. Thanks for watching. I'll see you again soon.